Saturday, April 25th, began with the mundane things, such as having the dressmaker over, Diana's dressmaker, who is going to make me up a hostess gown out of the beautiful hand-woven material that Diana brought me from Scotland. And also Mrs. Myers over to turn one of the saris that was given to me when I was in India, the one that Mrs. Indira Gandhi gave me, into a negligee. And going to see my dentist, Dr. Hurley, for the necessary and bothersome annual checkup, but the happy relief of finding that my teeth are really in good shape. So much for trivia. The more interesting news of the day was that Dr. and Mrs. J. Frank Dobie had arrived from Austin the day before to be our house guest, and in our absence, Linda Bird had met them as hostess and had taken them in charge and put Dr. Dobie in the Lincoln room and Mrs. Dobie in the Queen's room, where they were both happily settled. I'd spent a moment or two greeting them early this morning, and then just before lunchtime, or what I thought would be lunchtime, about 1 o'clock, I asked Mrs. Dobie to come in and have a glass of sherry with me. Dr. Dobie had gone over to see Lennon in his office, where he was going to have a brief press conference. I got a call from Lennon's office saying that'd be over in about 10 or 15 minutes, and he was bringing President Truman and Walker Stone with him. I went in the kitchen to ask Zephyr and discovered that we were having hash. Now, hash is one of Lennon's favorite foods, especially with jalapenos, and I figured that would be all right for Dr. Dobie. But with President Truman on hand, I was slightly abashed at the prospect of hash. However, with trying to evaluate what you can do in 10 or 15 minutes, I decided we would proceed calmly, unperturbed, with hash. Minutes passed. Finally, about an hour later, well after 2 o'clock, Lennon came over with Dr. Dobie, Walker Stone, and Bill Stevens, and President Truman. Linda and Wari joined us, and we sat down for our not-elegant luncheon, me with the sad feeling that if I'd simply gotten a sirloin strip out of the deep freeze, it could have been cooked in that hour's time. Or if it hadn't, what would have happened? Just waste it, that's all. Oh well, wrong guess sometimes. Dr. Dobie, ruddy of countenance, frosty of hair, looking a little bit like Carl Sandburg or Robert Frost, and talking like a philosophical old Texas cowhand, was a delightful guest. And ever since my trip to Greece with him, I have an especially warm place in my heart for President Truman. There was one moment during lunch when someone reminded us of a caustic saying of the Republicans during Truman's administration that he, Truman, made his foreign policy decisions in the dark. At that time, he was alleged to have answered, there was one decision he made in the dark on his knees, and that was the decision whether or not to drop the bomb. At lunch, he framed it this way. He said when they told him about the existence of the bomb, what it would probably do, and how it would probably bring from Japan to its knees in 2 or 3 days' time, he called in General Marshall and Omar Bradley and said, if we invade the Japanese islands, how many American boys will it cost? General Marshall said, our best estimate is between 200,000 and 250,000. President Truman then said, what a decision to make. The decision was made. There was nothing else to do but drop it. He went on to say that the decisions he had to make, the hard ones while he was president, he'd get the best advice he could, go on and make up his mind, and then never look back, and that he could go to sleep at night as soon as he got his head on the pillow. That is certainly one likeness between him and Lyndon. Later, I read where Mr. Dobie said that he heard Truman say, Lyndon Johnson may be the greatest president since Lincoln, this opinion having come out of remarks on the railroad achievement. This was in line with so much that he had said to me on his trip to Greece. I looked around beaming that Linda and Wari should be there, soaking up the history of the moment. Dr. Dobie told a bit about the press conference he had just participated in, and that was the reason why they were so late, of course. It was called suddenly because of President Truman's presence. There were between 60 and 70 reporters making a half circle in front of the president, with President Truman on Lennon's right and Dr. Dobie on Lennon's left. It must have been quite a morning for Dr. Dobie. Governor Brown of California had just been in, and Walter Reuther of the AFL-CIO. After lunch, we hustled Dr. Dobie off for a rest, and I said goodbye to the other gentleman and fell into bed for a little rest. This is the night of the gridiron dinner, so about 6:30, Dr. Dobie, all trussed up in white tie and tails, which he said he'd had ever since he went to England to teach in the early 50s and expected to outlast him, as indeed it will, was about to set out with Walker Stone for this great masculine event of the year. It always amuses me that Lyndon, who makes so many ridiculing remarks about women wanting to put on a long dress and making us men get into a black tie or a white tie, and here, with not a female present, he growlingly puts on the full regalia and goes forth to the slaughter year after year. This he did shortly after the others had left, and then I escorted Mrs. Dobie downstairs with a guidebook in my hand, and sort of did two things at once, gave myself a lesson in preparation for the arrival of my guests on May the 7th. That is, learning more about room by room, Savonnery rug, our Waterford chandelier, or the Monet painting given by the Kennedy family. And the other thing, trying to make a very special guest, have an intimate tour, complete with anecdote, of the first floor. Then we went upstairs for an early dinner, just the two of us, and talk of Texas wildflowers, Mrs. Dobie's authority on that, and early bed, which gave me a chance to read my thick envelope of read and file, and some of the letters that have accumulated since I last paid attention to my desk, unremitting tyrant that it is.